Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. Well, after, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as I said, I'm in the media room at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C., as we visit with our good friends at the NFIB. And folks, if you hear the chattering and the noise around here, it's just because the folks here in the media room at the NFIB are so excited about having me here. It's like a dream come true. See that? They're giving me a hand here. I'm getting a sitting ovation here, ladies and gentlemen. It really warms my cockles. Hear that? Yeah. So, bunch of smart alecks here. Anyway, we're having a good time, and sitting across the table from me, well, I'll bring her into the fun here too, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, it's like a dream come true for you too, isn't it?
Well, more like a nightmare, but we'll get to that later. And Jim, this is a working press room, you know.
I know.
You can't tell a journalist not to talk.
You're telling me it's a working press? Yeah, that's right. Well, and there's the phone, folks, and hold my calls, by the way. Joan, thanks for coming over. It's good to do this face-to-face with you again. And
I get more money doing it.
That's exactly right. We'll have a little something extra in your paycheck, in your pay envelope this week. Joan, what's going on? What's Kiplinger having to say about what's happening in the world today? Looks like you guys have some things to say about housing.
Well, I guess we don't have to worry about a housing bubble, according to the letter. Home values are going to keep rising, so that's the good news.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't rising prices create a bubble, potentially?
Well, I keep waiting for the bubble to burst, but we're not showing any signs of it yet.
Well, the bubble's just going to get bigger before it bursts. That's the bad news. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Glass half empty.
Well, what's driving the prices up? The mortgage rates are still pretty good shape, aren't they?
Well, the job market's doing better, and consumer confidence is doing better.
Right. Well, exactly. And you know, Bill Dunkelberg was just on the show with someone you know, and chief economist with the NFIB on the last hour. And he was just saying that, you know, we're hiring people like crazy, just like we knew what we were doing. And so that's got to be good for you know, part-timers going to full-time. A lot of that's going on, and that makes people think, you know, maybe we can go ahead and buy that house or upgrade to the next house.
Right. The job market and consumer confidence are totally linked. So
right.
Those consumers that have kept this recovery going are going to keep at it.
Well, and even mortgage rates. I mean, you know, when you amortize some of the higher mortgage rates now, when you put that into an amortization, most people can handle that.
Well, when you say higher, you're probably talking about, 6.5%?
Yeah.
Which, you
right.
know, a couple of years ago, we'd be dying to have 6.5%.
Well, you and I remember when people were figuring out how to buy houses when it was double-digit interest rates.
12, yeah. 13, right?
One of the things that you guys also point out is that home remodeling is going to stay pretty busy. Now, what's up with that?
Well, at least I know in this market, I don't know about other markets, but there's just no houses to buy.
Yeah.
So the only thing you can do is improve your house rather than move, maybe make it bigger. And so that's going to stimulate a whole lot of other businesses.
Well, Joan, you live in an artificial economy, though, here in our nation's capital.
I live in an artificial world here.
I think so. That's, what is it, you used to call it Bizarro World or something in the comics. But no, Siri, you were talking about there are no houses to buy. In Flyover America, there are houses to buy, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, there
out
are.
Out in the real world?
Yeah, out in the real world. But I do agree with you. I do think that that there are people that over the last 3 or 4 years have bought houses, and maybe they didn't buy the house. The house didn't have everything they wanted. And now that the economy is getting a little bit better, and maybe we got a raise. Maybe the part-timer went to full-time, and our kid got a job, and so we got a raise by the, you know, when that happened.
Right.
Maybe people can add that spa tub in their glamour bath, or put a carport on the back of the house.
Well, I think that's exactly right. Or maybe add the mother-in-law suite or something like that.
Oh no, let's not do that. You just had to bring that up, didn't you? What about outlook? The long-term outlook on the bottom of page one there. You guys talk about that.
Well, like I said, no bubble bursting here. We say the outlook's going to remain strong, and this is an amazing figure. We say that we're going to need 2 million new homes each year for the next 10 years.
2 million
to house everybody
each year. Well, now, you know, one of the things that I read about recently, and Bill Dunkelberg's still sitting next to us here. I'll get him to nod or shake his head about this. But, you know, the Fed was concerned about what was going to happen to rents. You know, they got concerned about
that. He's nodding.
Yeah, Bill's nodding. And they were concerned about rents because so many people were buying houses. And you're saying we're going to need $2 million a year. Our population is not going up that much. So, I mean, that's got to be taking a lot of renters out of the market, right?
I know in this area it is because rentals are going begging right now from what I hear because everybody wants to buy. Now, that may change as interest rates go up a little
bit. Well, you know, I wonder, you know, the last time that this happened was after the Tax Reform Act of 86 hit the syndication, the real estate syndication industry, and subsequently the SNLs, and we had a banking debacle, you know, back in the 80s.
Right.
So, I wonder about that a little bit, and I wonder if the, you know, and it surprised me. I was surprised to read that the Fed was concerned about that, about the rental prices.
How much good news does it take to make you happy?
Well, I had a pretty good blueberry muffin earlier. That was nice.
Well, that's something, I guess.
Well, no, I'm just, you know, these are, well, we've been Pollyanna all morning with, you know, Bill Dunkelberg.
I missed it. I come in here and you're Mr. Glass Half Empty.
Well, and Joan, I've got some bad news. We've got to move over to the top of page two.
Uh-oh.
And what's there?
Oh, no, I'm not turning it. I just saw the word energy.
Yeah. It, you know, if you think about it, that's not good news either. Bill and I were talking about that. Of course, he pointed out that if fuel prices stay at $2 a gallon, I said that they're going to be there for a while. He said maybe that's good news. If they stay at $2 a gallon, maybe that'll, you know, inflation won't increase after that.
Well, if what you're saying is it's better that they're not going even higher.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But you know, we've really kind of had a little holiday compared to the rest of the world, haven't we, for petroleum?
I think we still do. I think the Europeans would still laugh at us for being upset about
$2
a gallon.
What are they paying? Effectively $4 a gallon or so in Europe?
Least.
Four to five?
Yeah.
Something like that. And so,
it's very good having Bill here to nod.
I like the nodding, yeah. It's not the same as radio.
It makes me feel comfortable and secure.
On radio, though, it's kind of like doing animal shadows on the wall, you know, in a proposal. I've done that before. but you know, we're heading into the winter. And people are starting to make contracts for their fuel oil, aren't they?
Well, right, that's now true. We're not heading into the winter, Jim.
Well,
could we enjoy summer first before we get to the fall?
You know, usually I'm the Pollyanna here in this group. I don't know what's come over me. Let's talk about nuclear. Is that going to be something that's, you know, one of the things that it looks to me like with the prices of natural gas going up and everything... It seems like maybe in the United States that we would start talking about nuclear again. And you guys reported on that a little bit. And what I want to do is I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want you to tell us a little bit about what Kiplinger has to say about the nuclear possibility, the possibility of rejuvenating the nuclear industry, nuclear power industry, electrical generation industry in the United States. It's almost 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pryde, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we'll be back after these messages. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, having more fun than the law allows, ladies and gentlemen. Don't tell anybody I'm having this much fun. They'll come and take this job away from me. Visiting with our good friend Joan Pryde, Senior Editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, it just doesn't get any better than this.
Well, that makes one of us.
The lovely and talented and often acerbic Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she gets, they pay her hazardous duty pay for doing this show, by the way, folks, in case you didn't know that. Joan, let's move over, and we're on page two, and I don't want to talk about gasoline anymore, because that's kind of been the downer. We've talked about that a little bit today. I want to talk about the nuclear possibilities. Higher fuel prices, according to Kiplinger, are giving nuclear energy a big boost. Now, I'm assuming that means power plants.
Right, and that's what we need is more plants constructed. But we're saying a 50% jump in nuclear power by 2020, so that's not too far away. And we're saying approval times for plants may be cut in half by the federal government. That's what they need. That's what they really need.
But, you know, Joan, that's kind of a funny thing to say, because how long has it been since anybody's approved a nuclear plant?
What's half of forever?
What's half of nothing?
Yeah.
You know, Three Mile Island... I wonder what the economy would look like right now. I wonder how things would be right now if Three Mile Island had not happened. if we'd not gotten that scare. Because there's been nothing happening, really. Now, TVA, I know TVA has brought on some new units online since then. But but those were already there. They were already commissioned. They just hadn't been finished. But you know how loath I am to bring this example to the table, but the French have done a good job with nuclear. I hate to say that.
Wow. It really be true.
It galls me to say that. It really does.
No pun intended.
Yeah, but exactly. But anyway, they've been able to do it. I just wonder, it's going to be interesting to see how this will work in the future, because as you guys point out, electricity from nuclear power costs a lot less, doesn't it?
Well, that's true, and boy, we really could use it. But you know what's interesting? If you think about way back when, you had a protest movement against nuclear, which I'm sure they've disbanded and sat back and relaxed all these years, and it'll be interesting to see whether they come back or whether they reunite or how long it will take for them to do that.
I think that those guys haven't they've still got their signs fence cutting tools and all that kind of stuff. I think they're still out there. They've moved on to other things, but I think they know how to protesting is protesting.
It's like riding a bicycle.
That's exactly right. It'll come back to them. But you know, of course, the two big problems, the two things they're concerned about are the danger of the plant itself, but also what do we do with the waste?
Disposal radioactive waste.
That is a real concern. But it'll be interesting to see how that works. Let's move on down and talk about defense contractors, Joan. You say that defense contractors can expect larger increases in spending. Has Mr. Reagan become resurrected?
I don't think we're going off for doing SDI or anything like that, which is the old Star Wars initiative. But no, I think what they're talking about is our military needs an awful lot in terms of personnel and resources, and Congress is going to pass a defense bill that increases procurement, and I think defense contractors are going to have a very good year.
Well, you know, Joan, when Mr. Reagan increased defense spending against the advice of a lot of people in his own administration, he proved to the Soviets that we could afford butter and guns and bullets,
which they could not.
Not do both, and that's one of the things that expedited the demise of the Soviets of communism in Russia. But today there's a similar requirement, but for different reasons. The United States is the last superpower.
That's right. We're the only one.
The only one.
Yeah.
And so somebody has got to. I mean, we find ourselves in a de facto place of defending the world in some cases, don't we?
Right. Well, look at what we're doing now. Sure.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, the French may not want us to may not want us to go into Iraq. They might complain about our military might. But you know, if something happened, if the Germans came across the border for whatever reason, or the Liechtensteiners came across the border over there, you know, they might be glad that the U.S. would come to their rescue.
I would think so.
Yeah, especially those cunning Liechtensteiners, right?
Or the Luxembourgers.
That's right. Yeah, those guys, either one. Okay, Joan, let's move over to the top of page 3 and talk about Mr. Reagan's legacy. I invoked his name a minute ago, and what is his legacy going to be? What is it?
Well, we say he changed the course of government, and we just talked about him challenging the Soviet Union, and I remember him as the man of big budget deficits, but he also was trying to trim the federal bureaucracy, and I think he did it in part through the large budget deficit.
Right. Yeah, and the spending, the buildup, and I mean that was, you know, when I think of the deficits, right now we're getting a peace dividend. We're still getting a peace dividend because the Cold War is over. So isn't that dividend, you know, weren't those deficits worth what we paid for them? You know, in my opinion, they are. Bill Dunkelberg's nodding over here, so he thinks they are too. And so those deficits are. But you know, also, I'm not saying that the deficits are a good thing, but they're also not a bad thing, and you know that. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Joan?
Well, that's not what I used to hear back when we were trying to lower the deficits in the days of Graham Rudman Hollings. Deficits were the devil.
Sometimes in government, it's good to have deficits. Can be good, can't they?
Wow, I'm amazed. Am I talking to a big, big spending, big government liberal here? Wow.
Well, no, actually, you know, and of course, when they talk about the federal debt, the U.S. National debt, companies have debt, and they manage to do all right with debt. Let's take a quick break, and it's 29 after. We're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And if you have something you'd like to say to me, here's how you do it. It's an email address, askjim@jbsba.com. You can ask a question or you can make a comment. If you'd like to write me and tell me how much you just love having Joan Pride on the show, that's all you got to do is just write that email. Right, Joan?
How many letters have you gotten?
Oh, I get the mail just piles in by the sackfuls.
Forward it to me.
Yeah, I will. You want all of them, Joan?
All three of them, yeah.
All right, Joan, let's get back. We're talking, folks, about Reagan's legacy. That's where we are in the Kiplinger letter this week. And you know, Joan, what did you think about the week that was last week?
Well, it was an amazing week. We were
almost unprecedented.
I think so, because we were wondering, trying to remember the last time that a president had had the honors that President Reagan had, and
yep.
We think it was Lyndon Johnson.
But who's ever had a bicoastal a week like that?
Well, and then that occurred just because he happened
yeah.
to be want to be buried
yeah.
in California.
But it just prolonged the drama, didn't
right.
it? I mean, it just made the drama that
right.
much bigger,
right?
Didn't it?
I honestly don't know how his family got through the day, because if you think of how early they had to get up in the morning and with the time difference,
Nancy Reagan
how late
is 83, almost 84 years
she
old.
She was incredible that
she,
day.
You know, don't you think that the I don't know about the world, but the country was just hugging her up.
Oh,
that
yeah,
week.
And I think she knew that.
And
I hope she knew that.
Well, I hope she did, too, because I think people wanted her to know that, don't
right,
you?
Right,
I mean, they just admired that. That is one, I mean, if you were taking a poll right now, she'd have to be on the top of most admired
well,
women,
and
wouldn't,
to think
wouldn't
of,
she?
Of her role and how much she has suffered the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, yeah, there's no question that what we know about her character, especially with her staying by her husband over the last 10 years, you know, anybody who knows anything about that disease, Alzheimer's disease, knows what a horrible, horrible scenario that is for the family,
right.
And not, you know, of course for the patient. But anyway, so it wasn't just Reagan's week; it was Nancy's week too, wasn't it?
Oh, no question about it. That's
yeah.
right.
Well, let's talk about his legacy. Now, it
again?
Was well, the funny thing was, it was funny to see people talking about him in a nice way, talking about all the. You know, how cool he was in so many different ways. And these are the same people that you know, talked about him like he was a dog when he was in office.
Well, you know,
that's politics, though, isn't it?
There's two sides to every story, and I only heard one side that week. But and as it should be, because they were
right.
memorializing
right.
him. But,
right.
it, yeah, everybody seemed to forget the negatives.
What negatives? There were no negatives,
no,
Joan.
No, you're right. You're
no,
right.
No negatives.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I think he's going to go down in history as of right now, he's in the top four. And I have friends who disagree with me, and they put him in number three above Roosevelt. And because they don't like Roosevelt at all, but you know, after Washington and Lincoln, and I mean, I really believe, Joan, that Reagan was a man for an important man for the time. If Carter had been reelected, I don't think the country would be where it is right now.
Oh, interesting.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Well, you know me. I'm frequently wrong, but never in doubt. Well, I do believe, though, Joan, that the country and the world is still benefiting from Reagan's legacy, from the things that he did. I think the peace dividend, that I believe there really is a real-life peace dividend from disarming the Soviets and basically helping to dissolve those guys.
So you don't think that the Soviet Union was bound to collapse anyway?
No. I think you're right about that. I just think that it would have taken a lot longer, and there would have been a lot more mayhem in the meantime. Who knows what would have happened? But no, I think that lie could have been perpetuated a lot longer had we not proven to them that we could, as we said earlier, afford bullets and butter. So. Well, I can see I'm not going to draw you into this conversation
nope.
very much. Then I'm going to let you carry the next one. Human
okay.
resources. What's up with that?
Recruitment of new employees. Firms are really going after them now. And, of course, you know, it's been somewhat weak job market for a while now. And now if the job market is tightening, you have to go back to thinking about all those things you used to have to do to get and keep good employees.
Right.
And now we're talking about using stealth hiring strategies.
What is that?
Well, I don't think it's actually stealing employees, but we call it, we put a kind of a nicer spin on it. We call it building relationships. Which I guess is keeping your eye on good people at other companies and trying to get them over to your firm.
Well, yeah, and I you know, that's an interesting way of calling it, that stealth hiring. And by the way, one of the things that we know is that hiring is really picking up. A lot of jobs have been created this year already, and Bill Dunkelberg, who, as I said, earlier, was here. He was talking to us earlier about that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about human resources when we come back after these messages. And we're going to move on down and talk a little bit about technology right after these messages. 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is in front of me for one of the handful of times that we've done this, of all the times that we've done this. How many now, Joan? Hundreds of times that we've done this and over the years that you've joined us every week to talk about the most recent Kiplinger letter. We've done this a handful of times face-to-face, and it's fun to do this. Thanks for coming over. I'm at the JW Marriott Hotel, folks, helping the NFIB celebrate their biannual Small Business Summit, and we'll be broadcasting here the rest of the show today and tomorrow. We'll have some of the NFIB key folks here, some of their bona fides, some of their members will be on the show, and I'm going to get them to tell you about why they're NFIB members and what they do in their small businesses and why they think it's important for small business owners to be involved in politics, and that's coming up in the next show. Joan Kiplinger has four letters. One is the weekly, the flagship, 81 years now, almost, the Kiplinger letter. And then they've got three bi-weekly, the agriculture, the tax, and the California letter. Still working on a Delaware letter, right? You guys are, that's next,
one
right?
of these days.
and then, of course, you got the magazine, the monthly
right.
magazine, which is?
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Which you can find those in newsstands.
Sure
too,
can.
Right? Or you can subscribe, and I'm going to give you a website.
We would be thrilled if you would.
It would really make you happy. Would it make
right.
your day? Would it maybe even get you a little bonus
you
at
bet.
The end of the year? Kiplinger.com, ladies and gentlemen. That's Kiplinger. But don't just go there to subscribe, although I think you'll like to do that, because they still have a 30-day free trial, right?
Absolutely.
But also, folks, it's a good site. It's a place. There's a lot of information there that you need to be a subscriber to get to. But there's also a lot of good free stuff there. So check that out when you get a chance. And Joan, I think you got a phone number, don't you?
That's right. Our toll free number is 800-544-0155.
Don't forget to ask them about the Blasingame 30-day free trial.
And see what happens. See how fast they hang up on you.
Joan, let's talk about human resources again. We were talking about how jobs have the whole human resources. Element of being a business owner is really coming back quite a bit now, because we're hiring more people. We're going to have to train those people. We've got to provide benefits for those folks. We've got to manage them, and so the people who are supporting small business owners, this should really be a good time for them. And I know a number of those people, and they're telling me that their business is picking up. The trainers, the consultants, the people who are helping with services, the outsourcing of payroll, for example, and those kinds of things, all that's looking up for those people. And I think that bodes well for the economy. Now, why are we talking about COBRA? If we're hiring so many people, why did Kiplinger want to talk about COBRA this month?
I was sitting here trying to remember
what
COBRA stands for. COBRA, the acronym COBRA, has absolutely nothing to do with the rule that we're talking about.
Right.
COBRA is the something Omnibus Budget Reconciliation
right.
Act.
And right, congressional, I think, maybe.
Something, yeah, right. But this provision was put in, oh gosh, back in 1985, and basically it says that if you have more than, I don't know if it's 10 or 50 employees, it's a very small number,
mm-hmm.
but so almost every business has to worry about this. You have to tell you, give your employees notification that if they leave the company,
right,
they have the right to continue on the health plan as long as they pay for it, and
right,
they can continue up to 18 months.
Right.
And
but it's
this,
very expensive.
Oh, it's very expensive,
yeah,
but probably out in the marketplace as an individual, it might be even worse.
Well, where it's a good deal, especially, is if someone leaves for whatever reason and they've got an existing illness, a child or somebody they
right,
or some family member.
Right, that's very important.
And they need, you know, they need to continue the coverage, and they might have some difficulty transferring over to another plan with that illness in existence.
Well, it's now 2005, and it's taken all this time for the IRS to come out with rules, final rules, that tell you exactly how to handle these notices.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give a notice to the employee when they arrive at the company and also when they leave.
Right. And, of course, that takes effect in 2005.
That's right.
Right. And of course, when I was teasing you about that, typically when I think of COBRA, I think of when you lay somebody off. But it's also, but there are people who leave of their own will. They decide to go out and maybe start a small business. You know, more and more people are doing that, as you know,
right,
millions of people are doing that.
And I think early retirees come under COBRA as well. They they don't get COBRA once they qualify for Medicare, but I think they might be able to take COBRA if they're below 65, I think.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about those guys. Well, I've seen the price for COBRA, and it's expensive. I mean, it's in the
right,
hundreds and hundreds of dollars,
right,
and it's a shock for people when it happens to them. But it is a good thing, because especially if you need it, if you have that existing illness. But of course the point you're making is the record keeping. Right, that's what's going to happen January 1st in 2005. These new notices and everything.
Right, and in fact, if you go to the regulations, or if you even go to the Kiplinger website, we can show you the model notices, because
okay,
there's even a way you're supposed to, you know, the manner in which you notify them is spelled out. In the
okay,
tools.
So they can. And is that on the free site? The free part of the site?
Well, no, I'm afraid it's on the password-protected site. So
okay,
you'll just have to take that 30-day free trial.
Get that 30-day free trial, folks, and you can go. Now, tell us again about those forms.
Well, these forms are the model forms that the Labor Department has published, and if you could use your own form, but if you
right,
use one of these forms, you'll know you're doing it right, and you won't
right,
get in trouble.
Or you could probably go to DOL.gov, maybe find those.
Yes, and you could do that for free. Yes.
Yeah, you could do that for
free. I think
free,
you could.
But you wouldn't have the fun of talking to the operators and mentioning my name, Joan, right?
Well, that's true.
I mean,
that's
of course,
all part of the
you
experience.
Know how, you know, one of the reasons I like to give them the Blasting Game free trial information is because they love saying my name. They just can't get enough of that.
All three syllables of it,
yeah,
right.
We're going to take a quick break, folks. We're visiting with Joan Pride. We're at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C., helping the NFIB celebrate their Small Business Summit, the 2004, not to be confused with the 2002. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and visiting with our good friend Joan Pride at the J.W. Marriott Hotel, and we're up in the media room, and maybe I should say down in the media room. I guess I came down, didn't I, Joan? We came
I
down,
think
right?
So.
Yeah, we're in the bowels of the J.W. Marriott Hotel. That's where we are, and we're at the NFIB's 2004 Small Business Summit, and we're having a lot of fun. Joan, let's move over to page 4 and talk about trade. Now, the Supreme Court has weighed in on this a little bit, haven't they?
Well, and I think this is important now, just because, you know, we're becoming this global village, and multinationals are sort of taking over here. So this is, I guess, is an important issue, because we're asking, I guess the Supreme Court has to answer the question, can an individual from a foreign country or a company sue U.S. companies in U.S. courts for violating international treaties? Can they use the U.S. court system to get relief?
You know, I hadn't thought about that. Because we have a well-developed court system, and a lot of other. Of course, I don't know. Maybe the company would be better off in the U.S. court than in some of these other countries.
Well, oh, you mean the multinational that's being sued? It's
yeah,
possible.
Yeah.
But if you're suing to stop a practice that's occurring in another country, as you point out, with a court system that's not well-developed,
right,
you may have a harder time pressing your case.
That's an interesting body of law, there, isn't it? I would think. And,
yeah.
Of course, there are not too many small business owners that are multinationals, but But they might be. Joan, let's talk. What about the truck situation? This is an interesting thing. Didn't the Supreme Court weigh in on trucks from Mexico?
Well, gosh, this issue has been going on for years, through the Clinton administration. And how far are you going to let Mexican trucks into the country? And I know the unions didn't want to let them in. And I think for safety reasons, many people didn't want to let them in
either.
We were
concerned about their brakes.
Right.
We didn't mind the Mexican trucks. It was the Mexican brakes we didn't like.
But the Supreme Court has said that they can operate freely throughout the country.
It's interesting that the Supreme Court got weighed in on this now.
Well, I guess that there finally had to come, this had to come to some end, and that the Supreme Court was the end point.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this happens. And, of course, the border states are going to be the most affected. I'll have to ask my friends in Texas what their thoughts are on this. But what about Russia? Now, this is another thing you guys are covering this time. You said there's good news and bad news for foreign investors.
Right, and I think probably in the news media you're seeing a lot of stories about crackdowns and criminal trials of investors and things like that. But we're saying that there are reforms in Russia that are making it a better place in which to put your money. And that even though some of the democratic reforms are kind of being pulled back, a lot of the infrastructure is being improved, transportation, and even a mortgage market that will get home ownership going, which is kind of interesting.
I've been reading, though, and you guys point this out a little bit in this week's letter, I've been reading some things that are a little disturbing about what Mr. Putin's doing in Russia right now. That there's a little realpolitik going on over there, and I think that's what you guys are pointing out is the bad news element of this.
The bad news is the democracy doesn't look as in as good shape as it used to, but there's also articles saying that many of the Russian people are more used to a more totalitarian type of state.
Mm-hmm. So a little totalitarian flavor in their democracy, is that what you're saying?
Say that five times
fast.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, but yet you guys say that you think that they're going to attract $8 billion in new investment over there.
That's right, and that's up 18%.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I think we need to track Mr. Putin's the way he's behaving himself over there, the way he's treating folks, and some of the things I read say that it's kind of going the other way. What about China? Now they seem to be having some luck in cooling off their economy. And Joan, this could be good news for fuel. It could be good news for cement. You know, that's a big construction problem right now. Is the high cost of cement? There's a shortage of cement, I think, globally right now. Partially because, and steel prices have come down because the Chinese economy has cooled a little
bit. Right, and we've been complaining about this for a long time, that China is sucking up all these raw materials that we also need, and we've really been in stiff competition with them. So if they're, and we don't also, from a macro standpoint, don't want their economy to overheat.
Absolutely. Joan, quickly, we got 30 seconds. The UN resolution that we just got was unanimous. And is that going to help stabilize Iraq?
Well, we say it will. And there people in Iraq, both Shiite and Sunni, will want this action. And we think that it will help the transitional government get a better footing.
Right. Well, I sure hope it will. I think more people than know are dependent upon what's happening and what's going to happen in Iraq. Joan, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for making the effort. It was a good day.
Thanks a lot.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.